Hello there. Welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Monday morning, March 28th, 2022. The gang is here. Tristan Happy Cockcroft, slayer of myriad fantasy leagues. You should listen to this guy. Kyle Soppy researches and produces, and he knows his NCAA tournament stuff. Listen to him. I'm Eric Carabel. Listen to me read ads. On today's show, we're going to talk outfielders, latest news, and of course, your hash browns. Tristan, how are you today?
I'm doing all right, but now I'm really curious. If I've slain all these fantasy leagues, does that mean I killed them? And that's like the negative connotation. I don't know.
I don't think I'm using the exact term, but you're the winner of many fantasy leagues, and advisor to many. Let's get into the news here. Is there anything that matters to you from this past weekend? I was writing up my weekend report, and I ended up writing about Jeremy Pena of Houston, but he may be a building block. He may be the next Carlos Correa, but he isn't today. Is there any other news here that Albert Pujols, does that excite you? His platoon at designated hitter with Corey Dickerson? I mean, good for Cardinals fans. They get Pujols back, and it's maybe his final season, but I don't think anybody in fantasy wants him, points or Roto. And by the way, for the people that have been tweeting this out, our rankings in our base rankings are points league rankings because that's our base format now, points leagues. So if you're looking for Roto rankings, I do them terribly, but I do them. And if you're in a Roto league, I believe the Roto rankings will show up in your draft. But points league is our base. We will try to talk about points leagues more on this show. Anyway, back to you. Any news?
Yeah, the one is burying the Coors Field lead, the good old trade for Randall Grichuk.
Oh, I guess that happened after our last show, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Randall Grichuk for Raimel Tapia. And that's bad news for Tapia going to Toronto, where he may not even play regularly. He probably won't play regularly. Grichuk will play regularly in Colorado, bat fourth, fifth, sixth in the order. And he is one of the most extreme fly ball hitters in baseball. I moved him way up in my rankings. I don't think I have him in the top 100, but I think he might warrant it, right? I mean, don't we expect 30, 35 home runs now?
I suppose, yeah, based on the nature of his game. We've always known he's got strong and underrated hard hit metrics. The thing with this move is everyone thinks of Coors Field as a homer inflating venue. It actually inflates BABIP the most. It's not big for home runs. I mean, it helps them, of course, but it's about the spacious outfield territory. So what I'm curious about is, as you mentioned, being a fly ball hitter, does that mean he's going to get more doubles, triples dunking in, and that helps him a little in the points leagues? It's entirely possible. The batting average probably gains a good 20 points here, and that's big for him.
Did I read something about humidors everywhere?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
What's your take
on
this? That
was first tweeted by the great Edo Saris.
Right. So if humidors are now going in every ballpark, what does that mean for fantasy? Does that change your rankings, your approach, anything?
I think it's going to compress the park factors a little bit. And that is interesting from a fantasy perspective because we often overrate those, kind of like we just mentioned with Coors Field. We make assumptions about certain ballparks based on past history. And I mean, we're talking often 10 or 20 years ago or when the parks first opened. The big part of this is that if they're bringing the humidor into those areas with the marine layer that are closer to sea level, so San Francisco immediately comes to mind for me. Tampa is another one where the ball is actually going to get a little bit drier than it would otherwise. This is another point that Eno had made. I actually think it's going to bring those closer to the median. So maybe we don't need to worry about park factors as much anymore. But we're going to see this year. I mean, we should let a year's worth of numbers come in before we make any sort of firm judgments. But I'm a little less panicked about San Francisco hitters now, like Brandon Belt.
How do you feel about Kettle Marte? 5-year, $76 million contract extension with Arizona. I don't think we view Marte as a superstar, but that's pretty big money. Obviously buys out some, well, he's been around a while. He's already 28 years old. And what is he in fantasy? He's hit 300 in two of the past three seasons. We think he's a batting average guy. We think he's got power. Last year, he was on his way to maybe 25, 30 home runs, not a big base stealer, second base outfield. What is Kettle Marte? Are we underranking him? We have him ranked like in the 60s, don't we?
Yeah, about. And the reason for that is not so much that we don't think highly of the player. It's that he's dealt with some nagging issues injury-wise over the past year and a half. But he's been great if you take the three-year average, 318, 374, 543 slash lines. He's got 28 home runs averaged over those 3 years, and that's per 162 games. So a very, very good and all-star and fantasy superstar caliber player when healthy. I like him a lot. I do think that if he stays on the field for 150 plus games, he's got the ability to get into the top 25 overall players. And that's whether it's Roto or points. We might be underranking him. It's all about the confidence and how healthy you think he stays.
You have him ranked 39, so I stand corrected. I'm the one who doesn't rank him as well. Is there a difference between Roto and points in this on this player?
Yeah. Yeah, there is, because he makes he actually makes some of the better contact in the league. He's very high in I believe he's over the 90th percentile in contact rate.
Okay. Well, that would do it. So I probably need to move Ketel Marte up in my rankings. Where do you have Andrew Vaughn? He was taken off on a stretcher this weekend, playing the outfield. It's a hip injury. It doesn't sound too serious. You have him 77 among outfielders alone. So, and unranked in your top 300. Now, that's a little interesting to me, because this is a young player who we think has a lot of power. Not a great rookie season, not great contact rates. And the White Sox are misusing him, obviously. They should just leave him alone at DH probably. But he's not an outfielder. But Andrew Vaughn, why don't you rank him? Because I would have guessed I have him ranked in my top 250.
I want to like Andrew Vaughn, but I've got concerns. First, the points league thing. He's a little bit less attractive in that than he is in Roto. He didn't quite put up the kind of plate discipline numbers I was hoping for. So that's the first one. The second one is, I don't know exactly what the role is. I need to see him in there every day, and I don't feel like the White Sox have made this commitment as to who he is in the lineup, what spot. They're using him a little bit more against lefties and avoiding some of the righties. So volume-wise, that also hurts him for points. And the other is that I don't want to get carried away with this idea that this is a player who could be a star and maybe it happens this year, but maybe he's the one who's the post-type sleeper for 2023, 2024. I think the time's going to come. I'm prepared to not be the first one on board. That's all it is. But I can see the point on him. If you like him a lot, I can't.
I don't know. I'm not sure if I do. It looks like he might be in a platoon with Gavin Sheets at DH. Mm-hmm. Maybe they shouldn't be playing him in the outfield. I don't think they should be until he learns it better, or he's not really an outfielder. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting when I looked at, I was thinking of the rankings, like this is a guy who should have 25 home runs, but if the White Sox aren't going to play him regularly against right-handed pitching, then he's not going to hit 25 home runs. Andrew Vaughn, this is a terrible comp, but if Andrew Vaughn's going to be used the same way Albert Pujols is, that's terrible. I mean, Vaughn is 24.
Yeah,
but I know you're looking at the comp and saying that's ridiculous, Eric. But if Vaughn is going to be used for 350 plate appearances, mostly against lefties, then he's the same as Pujols. That's a 12 to 15 home run guy they're wasting.
Yeah, and the thing is, I'm trying to feverishly grab where the Jose Abreu. That's what I thought. Okay, so Abreu is playing at the last year of his deal. He's 35 years old. So it's interesting you bring up that comp, because my first thought is I want to get on board on Vaughn next year. Because I think first base is the ultimate future. And maybe that's the point at which he takes off when the role is known and you don't have to worry about it. He drops into the Pujols 350 projection you're giving. And that's the worst case. That's the worst case. We're both being clear on that.
So Pujols is now back with the Cardinals. Good for them. He's going to platoon with Corey Dickerson as designated hitter. They have a full outfield. Your thoughts here on does this matter? I mean, Corey Dickerson shouldn't be facing lefties anyway. So I think it's actually for their team, it's a good move. But in fantasy, can you make any case here, even in a deep league, for Pujols or, I suppose, Corey Dickerson?
I can make a little less of a case for Dickerson, and that's about all I take away from it. Pujols is a daily league kind of guy, and he'll only throw a dollar at him because they'll use him right, and that's not going to kill his ratios, perhaps. But there really isn't much upside here. And Dickerson, another is this takes away any of those needs to put, the need to play him against lefties, same kind of thing.
Anything that you watched over the weekend, pitchers, Gerrit Cole against Pittsburgh, you think, he's going to mow him down. He didn't, give a couple runs. Dodgers kind of naming their rotation. They still have a couple guys injured/suspended. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't want any part of Andrew Heaney. I'm sorry. Maybe you do. Everybody likes
Heaney
him.
He pitched well in that game. I was not impressed by what I saw with that. And it was the same old, same old.
Too many home runs. I mean, yeah. It's easy to barrel this guy up, especially from the right side. I didn't watch a whole lot of baseball. Go Nova.
I did see one. I'll throw one name at you.
Yeah,
that
what do you got?
Really alarmed by Luis Severino's outing, and it was on the heels of the other that was not quite so good. He did not have it control wise in this latest.
Why? What do you expect there? Like, I'm totally not on board at all with the Severino, but like, you seem to be interested. I hope it's not just the Yankee aspect, but like, what is it about Severino? It's been like 4 years since we've seen him relevant, right?
Yep. But he's going to be in that rotation if healthy, because there just really isn't an awful lot of alternatives. And he is a guy who can put forth big velocity numbers, get Ks, have a high ceiling, but the floor is extremely low. And this really underscores how low it could be. You're looking at 106. That's the big thing. He's like Tyone in terms of the volume from last year. Maybe you amp it up to 150 to 165 innings, but he's going to have limitations.
I don't think we need to have you sing a closer carousel unless you really want to. Yeah, go ahead. Sing a little bit. Everybody loves it.
It's the closer carousel.
Your Miami Marlins. Dylan Floro has an injury. We don't know when he's going to pitch again, and everybody's just assuming it's Anthony Bender, but it could be the other Anthony, a lot older. Anthony Bass and Rocky Blyer. Who do you think is the Miami closer in April?
I still think it's Bender just because of the raw stuff, but they might well go committee style in order to fill that. And actually, I do think of Don Mattingly as a guy who would take the committee approach with the air quotes. The guy who gets the job on opening day looks great and then locks in the role.
I guess. I'm a little bit – I think a lot of people are just assuming it's going to be Bender. I wouldn't draft a Miami relief pitcher right now. Is that fair?
No. Yeah, that's fair. In the mix, in the standard mixed leagues, yeah. But you have to speculate in the deeper ones, and I have on Bender. I'm not any more blown away by Floro's fantasy potential. I think he's just fine, a very high floor, low ceiling kind of guy when healthy.
Any other news you can find in the closer world? I'm trying to think of situations that are still up for grabs and what might happen. No new news on the Dodgers. Nothing on the Red Sox. I still think it's Matt Barnes. Cincinnati looks like it might be wide open. Art Warren, Sessa with Sims out. Seattle.
Oh,
Ken Giles is not pitching anytime soon, but people are still drafting Seattle. Ken Giles.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where Seattle goes. They've got a lot of good candidates for the job, and they could shuffle it around. That could very well be the same maddening but exciting bullpen that we saw last year. The one that stood out to me was the Orioles' creativity with Tyler Wells. And you know, Wells is a guy I've written about that he's got some sleeper potential, at a Tommy John surgery a couple years ago, looked pretty good last year. He's throwing well as a starter.
You can't get any information on closer situations in spring training because they don't use their closers in the ninth inning. They use them in like the fifth or sixth inning. So we're going to have to wait until like the first week of the season here to see exactly like what San Diego is doing. Is it Robert Suarez, Pierce Johnson, any of the other guys? So, and managers aren't talking about it.
One other note for you is Pete Fairbanks. We know the Rays are notoriously closer by committee, but he's another guy dealing with an injury. So that takes another option out of the mix. Leans a little bit more towards Andrew Kittredge then.
Right. But I mean, could he get 20 saves? Probably not, right?
No. I mean, it's proper to project that because he's a step ahead of his competition, but it's not the nature of the team strategically.
Let's talk outfield here for points leagues and a little bit for Roto as well, my expertise. You know, when you have to fill five outfield spots, it's certainly different. There's other sites where it's three, and, you know, multi-eligibility certainly matters. But, like, it seems to me you can fill infield pretty easily, but sometimes when you get down to the fourth or fifth outfielders in the ESPN mock drafts that I've been doing, you're like, really? Do I want this guy? Like, Michael Brantley starts to look really good. Like, it's like outfield is not as deep as people think. That's how I'm kind of looking at it. So like if two of my first three hitters in any draft, points or Roto or outfielders, I'm like, oh, I'm okay with that. It's not a big deal to me because I just want the best guys, the best players on my team. Do you agree?
Yeah, I actually have done several mocks as you have, and I'm noticing that if you just take this casual, I can fill outfield easily, it's so deep. By the time you get to your third outfielder, you're going to say, wow, I'm a little bit light here. It's not as super deep as you think, but it's also comparable to where we were with first and second bases, or first and third base, as we were discussing in one of the previous shows. I don't think you can just ignore it. It's, for one thing, a place where in a Roto league, I think you are going to need to get a chunk of your stolen bases.
I agree with that. Let's go to some names here quickly and see. I have thoughts. Jordan Alvarez and JD Martinez, both eligible in the outfield. So that's something to consider. How much does that matter to you? You know, clogging, you know, air quotes, your DH spot, which you do with Framil Reyes, but you don't do with Jordan Alvarez or JD Martinez. I think it ups their value a little bit.
It ups it a little bit because you always want the flexibility. It's the same. It's a similar case to what we were making for those multi-eligible infielders, Ty France types. They give you some flexibility. Chris Taylor, another one that way. Getting an outfield eligibility instead of being locked in a DH kind of, you know, it frees you up during the draft to make certain moves for players later in the mid to later rounds.
Cedric Mullins, you have him 75 in points leagues. I have him probably half of that, 30 in Roto. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the stolen bases makes a big difference in Roto, but in points leagues, what don't you like? Do you not see a repeat coming here?
I do not see a repeat coming here. I do think he's very good. I think he's made some key adjustments. Giving up the switch hitting was a big plus for him, but historically speaking, players don't repeat the numbers to the level that a player like he did. There's going to be some natural regression.
You say he goes from like 30 home runs to 15.
No. That's severe regression. That would kill him in my rankings. I still think he's going to put up a very good year, but he's not going to repeat last year's numbers, and it's going to be a noticeable enough step backwards.
Have we discussed Baltimore and their fences moving in or moving out? Like, what do you think here of Orioles hitters? Did you move them in your rankings after you heard the news?
I did, yes, a little bit, especially the righty power guys. It is mostly in left field. The pictures I've seen make it look like it is a substantial ballpark change. So I'm wondering whether this becomes a lefty-leaning power venue, a little along the lines of what Yankee Stadium kind of has been.
How much did you change home run totals?
We're probably talking two or three over the course of the year.
Okay. So not that big a deal, but certainly something that can matter.
Again, don't lean too heavily into park factors. That's a key point.
This isn't park factors. This is the park changed.
Right, but that alters the park factors. And what it's going to do is it's going to alter the park factor for right-handed batters. To me, I actually think the best benefit is that the left-handed pitchers with a fly ball leaning who come into Baltimore are more attractive from a streaming perspective because they already were getting a plus based on it being Baltimore's lineup.
But you moved John Means up in your rankings.
Yes.
Didn't you? Yes.
Yes.
I did too. Seiya Suzuki. He seems like people are reaching for him because of the unknown. He's a rookie. He's never played in Major League Baseball before. But like a year ago with Kelenic and this year with Julio Rodriguez, it's like he's never failed before at this level. So everybody loves him. So Seiya Suzuki, you have him ranked like 130, 128 in points leagues. He's going top 180p. People are interested in the name. They're intrigued by what he could do. He's not a base stealer. He's a walks guy, but he's going to face far different pitching. Is this going to work out? It seems like we do this every year with players coming over from Asia. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. And there has not really been a middle ground kind of guy where they were perfectly adequate. I mean, somebody's going to call me out and then say, oh, here's this one or two. But more often than not, we're seeing guys who either vastly exceeded expectations, Ichiro, Shohei Ohtani last year, or we see players who fell pretty considerably short. I'm trying to remember who the Mets was. Kaz
Matsui, yeah.
For the Mets, yeah. I remember he generated a ton of excitement shortly after that. So I wonder whether we're chasing a little bit based on the proximity of the great Ohtani year. But I like the guy. As you said, he's got very good plate discipline metrics. He's a prime age player. Those are big
better in points leagues. 20 homers, 10 steals, 260.
Yeah. Right. Now, I think he might hit better. He might hit for a better average than that. Might be 275.
All right. I hate to bring this guy's name up, but he's going in the middle of ADP. Atlanta, Marcelo Zuna. I've kind of written him off for not just statistical reasons, but that's not fair. I mean, he could produce numbers. He's a 30 home run guy who could hit for average. Where do you project him?
He's another guy I hate to talk about, and I really hate to have on my team, but you know, we're drafting numbers and shouldn't really be thinking of the player. I actually think we might be as a group underrating him universally.
We absolutely not only, are. Yeah.
Not only in points, but also in Roto. And one of the dangers for fantasy with so much data out there is that when we see things like the NFBC ADPs early in the offseason and they carry through the preseason, those early drafts where we didn't know the story are dragging down the ADP and artificially causing the lot of us to underdraft the player. That's one I'm trying to be very careful of. You and I just had this conversation about going through the ADPs, picking it by dates. Very important to do that, and that's why I'm glad in the ESPN ones we're taking the 7-day rolling average.
I mean, look, we don't have to break bread with him, but he's the cleanup hitter for Atlanta, and we know he's got power. And last year was, you know, just a bad, I don't know.
Fits the DH very well, too. Getting the DH is a big plus because he's got that fallback spot.
Hate talking about it, but yep. We already talked on the last show about moving Conforto down in the rankings the other direction. Eddie Rosario might lead off for Atlanta, by the way. And Dansby Swanson might hit like 7, 8, 9.
I know.
If you like Dansby Swanson in any format, you can't like him anymore. I mean, if they bat him last, that's terrible. Eddie Rosario leading off is interesting.
You know what? Yeah, and it's reminding me a little bit of the Cardinals second half lineup, where you're sort of scratching your head a little bit from a lineup construction perspective. Another thing we tend to overrate a lot, but it looks a little that way. Like Tommy Edman, a not so great on base percentage guy leading off, so Rosario fitting that, and then Swanson hitting low.
Why Joey Gallo 180 in points leagues? A huge walker. I'm not saying he's Joey Votto, but for walks, he is.
Tons of whiffs.
Okay, but massive power, too. That's a 40 home run guy with a lot of walks.
And last I checked, he's not the extra base hit category filler that you think he is. Let's get that exact number for you. Yeah, so it's 18, 24, 15, 8, and 13. 8 was the pandemic year, of course. But when you're talking about a guy who doesn't reach 30 with the natural power, he's not getting the benefit in points leagues of those extra numbers. The walks alone don't drive point league scoring.
Do a Miles Straw in a points league. In a roto league, I can make the case for him in top 150 because that's a 30 steal guy, probably. I mean, but there aren't that many guys you can say are going to steal 30 bases. But in a points league, is Miles Straw undraftable?
In a standard points, I don't think I'd go as far as undraftable. He's going to hit high in the order and play every day. And those are good things for points leagues. And that's about where my positive vibes for him would stop. He's 288 for me. So it's, yeah, he's a fringe guy in the 10 team standard.
What, when you're looking at outfield, how much are you going to take chances here? Do you want guaranteed numbers? Would you take a Buxton and like a Tatis or a Yelich or Stanton, who may or may not be durable? I don't think he is. Bellinger, who still looks terrible at the plate. These are guys that like are going well above my rankings. And I think yours as well. We've talked about Buxton, but like when it comes to Yelich and Bellinger, guys who've really struggled in recent seasons, why do we just all of a sudden expect they'll be back to normal?
It's a fair question. I latch on this is a good topic for you to bring up because I think the nature of your league decides this. I found in my experience, and this is especially the more shallow the league you're in, you're going to find values in the outfield because there are people there who will pay for the top guys and not want to pay for the middle players and take nothing but chances on upside guys like Buxton. And I'm finding that there is always 2 to 5 super bargains in my home leagues. They're usually, you know, in the range of 12 teams standard mixed. There's almost always going to be a ridiculous outfield bargain. So make sure to sit back and wait for one of those guys, as opposed to overpaying to get the hype train guy like Suzuki or Buxton, as you had said. They're the ones who are going to tend to get overbid. And I pass. I rarely get them. I bet you're the same. I bet you pass too.
I think that's fair. Can you make the case to draft Julio Rodriguez for 2022 over Jared Kelnick?
You can make the case, yeah.
But you wouldn't.
I wouldn't do it. Not right now.
We still think Kelnick's going to be a star.
Yeah.
We also think Rodriguez is going to be a star, but the only reason I think you're taking Kelnick over Rodriguez is because of playing time.
Yeah, and yeah.
Seattle says tomorrow that Rodriguez is making the team as a starting center fielder and Kelnick is playing right, would you take Rodriguez over Kelnick?
I think I would, yeah, because I like the raw power potential. I'm a very big Julio Rodriguez.
He's a stolen base guy, hits everything hard. Yep. If he was guaranteed playing time, and I'm sure Schoenfeld would agree, we would take Rodriguez over Kelnick. But isn't that unfair? Like, we thought a year ago Kelnick was going to be a monster, and he struggles for a little bit, and now it's like, okay, goodbye.
So, two things on that is, philosophically, do you rather have the guy who's got the better power ceiling at the early stage of their career or the player we think has the better plate discipline skills? So that's the decision here, and I'm shooting for the moon. The other is, we got to mention, and Schoenfeld brings this up to us all the time, that Kelnick has not looked pretty in the field. And I've said, I like the good defensive players. It stabilizes their playing time. That is big.
Rodriguez might make the team because he can play center field.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to think about as well. We never talk about Riley Green, but doesn't he have as good a chance, if not better, to make Detroit as Rodriguez does Seattle? And aren't the numbers going to look monstrous as well? Maybe not as much power, but Riley Green looks like a star. And if you're drafting Akil Badu, I mean, in a dynasty over Riley Green, stop doing that. Riley Green's going to be the better player. Well, yeah. I mean, am I wrong? I mean, like, Akil Badu, like, could be a 2020 guy. He also could be in a platoon in a year. But I mean, Riley Green, we all agree, we just never talk about him. We should. Yeah.
I hate to say that it's a key year for Badoo, because he had a great and underrated season last year, and it was extraordinary that he did it based on the experience level he had coming into the season. It's just that, is he a star player, or is he just a solid major league regular, or a very good major league regular? But Green, I'm with you on that. I'm putting together some forecaster stuff to get ready for the season and put in some of the lineup projections, and every angle I go looks towards Riley Green playing every day and opening day. I like him a lot. The more I look at him, the more I'm really intrigued. I draft him over Julio Rodriguez at this stage.
The lead on our whole conversation there. that's huge news.
If you're gonna
draft Riley Green over Julio Rodriguez, then I want to see that in your rankings. I want to see it in my rankings
for this year. Yeah, for the 2020. For 2022,
right,
yeah.
That's what we're talking about here. Also, Brennan Davis of the Cubs. You want this prospects here in the outfield. Brennan Davis should play in the major leagues this season for the Cubs. Probably not in early April, but he will.
Doubtful. He's dealing with a minor injury, which is costing him some competition time.
This guy came up pre-show because I love him, you love him, you rank him in your top 100 in your dynasty rankings. Josh Lowe of Tampa Bay. Is he draftable in a points or a roto league for the season, or do you just expect only like 200 plate appearances in 2022? I mean, Kiermaier gets hurt tomorrow, and this guy could be on the opening day roster.
Right, and Kiermaier's history says it's not inconceivable that happens in low...
Inconceivable!
That's the 27th anniversary of that movie coming out. Anyway, as I digress.
I don't think you know what the word means.
What? Yeah. I do not know it. It's not... I do not think it means what you think it does.
Josh Lowe could be a 2020 guy who hits 260 right now for Tampa Bay, a future star, He's not getting drafted.
Because there isn't a path to playing time. It's the worst thing we do is fantasy. And in fantasy, yes, we probably should project 400, 450 PAs and leave it simply at that. And that's our way of hedging. That still makes him a draftable roto guy. It's tough to do it in the ESPN leagues. There's not a deep enough bench. I'd say get on board right away the second you know he's coming up. If Kiermaier, you're watching a game, gets hurt, run to the waiver wire and pick up Lowe.
I mean, they have Manny Margot.
By the way, Lowe is confusing me so much.
Josh Lowe could be a superstar. I
know you love him. I know you do, and I don't blame you.
I think we both should. I think he's got a lot of tools. Draft the skills, not the job. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, you know, just like we're saying, for relief pitchers, and, you know, if a guy's good, he'll eventually get the role that he should get anyway. Yep. I don't think there's anybody else we need to talk about for this year in fantasy in the outfield. And we'll move on, and we'll bring in our friend Kyle right now. He's got some hash browns, and if we've got some extra time, we'll just talk about more stuff.
Yay. Sure do. I think I know where Tristan might be going with this first question from Patrick based on an answer earlier in the show here. But Patrick wants to know, Mullins in the 10th round or Franco in the 5th in a head-to-head OBP keeper league?
Roto or points?
Let's
I guess roto.
Head-to-head OBP. OBP, it's got to be roto.
Yeah.
So Mullins versus who?
Franco, but you get a 5-round discount to take Mullins.
Hmm. No, discount is on Franco.
He has to give up a 10th rounder to keep Mullins, or a 5th rounder to keep
fifth.
Franco.
Then, I see what you're saying. Well, both are bargains. Yeah. But, I mean, it's still Franco, isn't it?
It's got to be.
I actually think it's Mullins.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't understand you. Okay.
Well, where do you have Mullins?
Well, Mullins is a bargain, but I mean, Franco is a bargain in the 5th round, but Mullins is a bigger bargain. But whose future do you like? I mean, you just ripped Mullins 20 minutes ago.
It's not so much ripping him as much as there's going to be a natural regression there. There's absolutely no question in my mind whatsoever that there's going to be a natural regression. He's going to shave at least 10% off those numbers, fantasy value-wise.
I think the point here is, what is Wander Franco this season?
I think the point here is that's not a long-term keeper league, and what's Franco next year? A third-round pick? A second-round pick? You can't keep him? I'd rather have the discount.
So do you think that give me Wander Franco's numbers next year.
Next year.
Because I view him as we view him this year as like an 18 to 20 homer guy, 12 to 14 steals, more on base than anything else. He'll score runs batting second in that lineup.
Yeah.
But I mean, is he like a monster in next year? Like, is he a 30 homer guy, 20 steals?
I I out myself on, I'm not getting Wander Franco saying this, but he exceeds what Ozzy Albies had last year and next year with ease. So I'm looking like 300.
So in a keeper league, I don't know how you could not.
15.
Yeah.
Because it's not really a keeper league. It's a fifth round pick. Does that question say keeper league? It's just a basic keeper league. What is next year's price? It's going to move up. It's not a fifth rounder forever. I'd rather have the 10th round guy because you're going to have to pay your fourth round, maybe a third round pick to get Cedric Mullins back. What are you paying to get Franco back? Your second rounder? I would do that.
Okay. That's fair.
And you? So that's paying the second rounder for Franco and getting the 10th on Mullins, or you keep Franco at the fifth and you spend your third on Mullins? Which is better?
I think this is Tristan playing chess when me and Eric are ready to play checkers.
I'm ready for lunch. What's next?
What's lunch? That's my next question.
There you go. That's short term. Long term, what's for lunch, you know, in 2023 with Cedric Mullins? Tom, longtime listener of the show, wants to know if Mondesi is now worth our while to look at, given that the upside versus his asking price. Has the ADP finally made him worth looking at?
No.
Will his ADP ever make him?
If you're looking at the points league ADP and drafting for Roto, then yes.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
I can't even find his ADP. He's not.
It's got to be outside the top 10 rounds.
Because he's a truly terrible points league.
He's out of the top 100 in points ADP. He's probably
out of the top 200 in points league.
What are we doing here, folks? I mean, like, okay, like, obviously I'm getting destroyed on Twitter because of Trout and Tatis, and people just don't like my stance, and that's fine. But honestly, it's even worse. Like, how do you not see this? In a points league, look, I've made the statement on Twitter, and again, the people that hate it are going to hate it no matter what. Mike Trout might be the best hitter in baseball, but he can't be the number one pick in fantasy, missing a third of a season. Mondesi misses more time, and he's a terrible points league player. The strikeout guy does not have the power that he did a couple of years ago. The stolen bases aren't worth it. I don't know exactly what Kansas City's doing. They have too many players right now in the infield, right? Because Nicky Lopez is probably their best shortstop. But I don't know. And Bobby Witt, is he making the team? I don't want Mondesi at all in a points league. It'd have to be like round 15, at least 20.
Mondesi's ADP for us in points leagues is 229th overall. If you take his March ADP in the NFBC format, he is 59th overall. That is too aggressive.
Well, that's Roto.
I think. Yeah, and I actually think 229 is too aggressive for points too, but I see the point of it's one of your last picks and maybe he stays healthy and gives you that 20 homer, 40 steal year.
Come on. 20 homers. I could see 40.
You know, steals. Neither of us believe it. But if he stayed healthy, wouldn't he do that?
Who will end up as Kansas City's top infielder on the points and Roto player rater? Isn't it Bobby Witt?
Clarify if Merrifield counts.
Well, in a points league.
No, I mean, does he count as an infielder?
Let's count him as an infielder and say in a points league, would you rather have Merrifield or Bobby Witt?
In a points league?
Because it's still rather. I'd rather have Merrifield.
I'd still rather have Merrifield. But so, I like that. That's a good
point. Seems like Kansas City needs to make a trade here. And the other guy here, and I've got too many shares of him, is Yan Gomes. They haven't traded Wilson Contreras yet, the Cubs, which seems a little bit interesting to me. Like, why would you sign Yan Gomes to a multi-year contract unless Contreras is going to play, you know, DH, outfield, and first, whatever? You're not pushing aside Schwindel, but like, I don't understand what they're like. Maybe they're waiting for a team to be desperate, but they have to trade Contreras, don't they? And so do the Royals with, you know, I guess Nicky Lopez and Merrifield.
They're waiting for Anthony Volpe for Wilson Contreras. That's probably what they're doing. It gives them the flexibility to wait for the deal they want. I can kind of see it.
It's bad news for me having Yan Gomes in several leagues. I thought that would have been fixed by now. Okay.
They might DH Contreras a little bit. They might turn him into a Salvador Perez type.
I think they will. And I think Yan Gomes can still get to like 12 home runs and 260 that way. So I kind of think Yan Gomes in multi-catcher leagues, not in an ESPN league.
What'd you pay for him? It's like a $3 catcher?
It was almost nothing. I still think he's worth $3.
Sure.
All right.
David is next up. He wants to know what your expectations are for a pair of middle infielders that surprised last season in Crawford and Adames.
Which Crawford, JP or Brandon?
Let's go Brandon. 24 homers last year, almost hit 300.
Both surprised, really.
I mean, I think Adames is the key guy here because his home road splits may be a thing. He never hit in Tampa. And then he goes to Milwaukee and he becomes an all-star caliber player. I mean, 25 home runs. That's ridiculous for Willie Adames. I mean, he hit 20 with Tampa a couple of years ago, but he never hit for average. And if you look at what he actually did with Milwaukee, he had 285 with an 887 on base percentage. He took walks, hit for power. He looked great. We're kind of underranking Willie Adames. Let me see where you have him ranked to make sure that's actually a thing.
Another guy who gets docked in points leagues, unfortunately, much as I like the guy a lot.
You still have him just outside your 100.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's a top 100 nope,
that's
player.
Me. That's my rank. You know what? This search thing. All right. So I have him just outside the top 100. You, of course, do not in points leagues.
Where do I have him? 160, 170 probably?
Trying to find this stuff is ridiculous.
Actually,
you have him 210. You have him 210 and I have him 106. I probably overrank him a little too much for Roto, though.
Please don't move him. Well, I'm not going to tell you what your opinion should be on the player, but please don't. I actually think he's a very, very interesting Roto pick.
I mean, if you're going to draft James B. Swanson, why wouldn't you just draft Adames instead? He's going to bat higher in the lineup, just as much power, probably a higher ceiling for batting average, neither runs. Wouldn't you rather have Adames than Swanson?
So when I filed this particular update, I was under the impression Swanson was not going to get pushed down the lineup to the extent that he was. So yes, the gap is going to narrow between those two in the update. Adames, we got to point out, and I don't know why this hadn't dawned upon me. Tropicana Field is a wretched ballpark, and there have been comments made about the batting eye issues that Adames just couldn't deal with there. So looking at those home road splits does tell me a story that intrigues me, and he showed some significant improvements and the potential to add more power to his game.
Over the last three seasons, Adames' home road split 623 OPS, 919 in road games, twice as much power, 202 batting average versus 307. I think me ranking Willie Adames 106 is actually for Roto is actually legit.
I fully agree with you on that. That's why I said, please don't, unless you don't like the player.
No, I do. I do like the player, and he's going to bat higher in the order. Brandon Crawford, 24 home runs. We just talked about the Giants and like the Humidor situation. Like, maybe he does this again. And that was a career high at age 34, but it's a good shortstop. I mean, 298, yeah. That's ridiculous. But like 270 with 24 home runs again, I could see that. Brandon Crawford's probably being underranked.
It probably is, yeah. We're mentioning two teams that I put on that scale of the Humidor situation in Tampa and San Francisco, and whereas Tampa has all those terrible park things that are piling together, it's really just the Humidor benefiting Crawford here. So Crawford's probably going to move up. I might actually have Crawford and Adames put in the same place. Adames is the one that's more interesting to me from a growth potential standpoint, but Crawford's going to hit that projection. Crawford's real obstacle to me is if he gets hurt and misses time. Because he's a good defender, he'll be in the lineup very consistent. Hits lefties.
Crawford is
he did last I checked.
Crawford is a secure, safe player, older player.
Yeah.
And at some point he'll hit a wall and stop doing this. But I built a couple teams with veteran players last week. I had two auctions at the same time, and you can say I like old players, but like other than Nelson Cruz, there was a case to be made for getting these established players so I don't have to deal with the ups and downs of these Kelnick types. I don't know what Kelnick's going to do. I know what Brandon Crawford's going to do. I'm not comparing them. I'm just saying like it's a safe play in an auction to get Brandon Crawford for a couple bucks and then just leave him alone. You know, I like doing that.
Crawford, by the way, had some underrated metrics in the points leagues things. I was doing a little research on that last week. He always comes up a little ahead of even where I rank him.
Fair enough.
You know what Brandon Crawford is, Eric? He's Adam Wainwright, just a batter for you.
I don't have any shares of Crawford anywhere, so he's not the same for me, and he's also like 5 years younger. But I see your point in that.
The archetype.
The type, yes. I'm trying to think of some of these older players that I keep getting in all these leagues. I guess I could look it up.
Is it that you fill shortstop by the time he comes up? I'm going to bet that's the only reason you're not getting him.
It might be. I'm trying to think. Let me look at your rankings and tell you the shortstops I keep getting in these leagues. Like, I like Xander Bogaerts, Roto and points, so I keep getting him in leagues. I like Jake Cronenworth in Roto and points. You know that. I keep getting him. I don't think I have Adames. I'm not even sure who the shortstops. I get Chris Taylor I have in a couple of leagues. I love the flexibility. Yeah, That's pretty much it. I don't see who else I'd be getting. I'm going to move Jeremy Peña into my top 300 today. Because if Houston likes him that much to maybe lead him off, then we're missing something. We're just missing something. Baker's been around this game 50 years. If he wants to lead off Jeremy Peña, which he's done in two of his last three games that matter in the spring, something's there.
I just don't know how I feel about what he did in AAA with the plate discipline numbers. That's all. He's
that
got
was
to
bad.
Turn those around.
That was no walks, but the power, the speed, like they think he's the next Correa.
I think the speed is there now. That's where he's going to play. And if he can handle the defensive chores at shortstop, he's going to be in the lineup. But I think it's best for them to work him in at the bottom of the order. I think he's a guy I'd be very happy to get late in my drafts. And that's probably what you'll have to pay.
I love Cronenworth. I'm also watching St. Louis. I'm not a big Paul DeJong fan, but I got him in a league last week. He was like $1 or $2. But Sosa could be, I want to see who wins that shortstop job in St. Louis. I mean, they're going to bat eighth or ninth anyway, but still it's kind of interesting to me. And I want to see what San Diego does. Are they really going to play Ha-Seong Kim? He doesn't look like he can hit in this country. And I still like Nicky Lopez. I mean, like that's a batting average guy who can steal 20 bases that nobody likes, talks about, allowed eligibility.
Incidentally, you mentioned DeJong versus Sosa.
Yeah.
The new manager, Oliver Marmol, we mentioned this on an off-season show. Couple notes on him is he might actually change up leadoff. That was the thing we talked about with Edmund. He mentioned DeJong is it's his job to lose. He also mentioned the thing about the closer by committee.
Yeah. Everybody's drafting Gallegos. It may not be Gallegos.
And I still think we go to what you were saying, DeJong being the leader probably wins the job. It's still probably Gallegos' job to close. It's still probably Edmund at leadoff. But the fact that a new manager said that, we have to listen.
Absolutely.
Last question here comes from Jeff. He wants to know which middle relievers can rack up enough counting stats to matter this year in Roto.
Middle relievers. So we're looking at guys who I assume that means they're not going to get a lot of saves, which is fair. Let me go to the projections here and see who – do we have any holds projections? Probably not.
In the overall, I can dig up the leaders on that. Well,
no, I'm who we're going to get – Devin Williams to me is the number one non-closer because that's a massive strikeout guy. That could be 100 strikeouts, suppresses runs. ERA, WHIP are going to be great if you want holds. And, you know, if the closer gets hurt, it's clearly Devin Williams getting saves. There's a bunch of lefties. I want to see what happens with San Francisco. Is Jake McGee could get 30 saves or 30 holds? I don't know.
Yep.
That's interesting. You know what I've been doing? I've actually been picking up middle relievers in a couple of leagues. Like I have a score sheet league where it doesn't matter if they're going to get saves. You just want good relief innings. I tried to draft Chad Green of your Yankees. Durable, a lot of innings, a lot of strikeouts, you know, don't really care what his role is. Johnny Lasagna. Like, what do you think of that? That Jonathan Loaisiga is a guy who, that was a great year, a legitimately great year. He won games, threw a lot of innings. Strikeout was just okay, but
he's the new Gallegos for that team or for what the Cardinals were if he can stay healthy enough to have the durability that Gallegos has showed.
I mean, you're looking at Atlanta, Tyler Matzek, Will Smith, not throwing punches, Luke Jackson. Like there's
don't say bad things about him or watch out.
Yeah. That was crazy. I wasn't even watching.
Oh, my gosh.
I was watching college basketball.
I was watching, and I couldn't believe that. I'm like, did that happen?
That actually happened. Twitter made sure it happened.
Oh, yes, it did.
Don't draft James Karinchak. He's already on the disabled list. Yeah. You know, it was magical while it was going, but Clause A is going to get 35 saves. And if you draft Karinchak, I don't think you're going to get much, at least the first month or so. So, I mean,
We got seven guys projected for 24-plus holes. You want them?
I do.
Tyler Rogers leading with 32, Luke Jackson 28, Genesis Cabrera, Tyler Matzek both of 26, and then the 24s are Adam Ottavino with the Mets now, Ryan Stanek and Ryan Tepera. Jackson stands out to me of that group, and Cabrera could sneak in a couple saves in a committee.
Ryan Tepera is really good. He's not going to get saves because that closer is durable and gets every last save, Iglesias. But
he'll be a big holds guy, yeah.
Ryan Tepera could be like a poor man's Devin Williams when it comes to fantasy. It's a lot of strikeouts, a lot of holds. We hope we answered the question. All right, you have any final thoughts, sir? As we finish up today's show, we'll be back on Thursday. Not a whole lot going on, you know, like it was not an action packed fantasy baseball weekend. Not a lot, no injuries, no lineup changes, no big demotions. I mean, Toronto sent down a couple guys, but we knew they would. Like there's nothing. I'm watching the Phillies. I think Bryson Stott might beat out Alec Boehm at third base.
Yeah,
I really
look pretty good. I saw him in that game against the Yanks. Yeah,
he has power.
I can see that. This is going to be a big week for guys like Stott. I'm glad you brought that up. Is that I expect we'll start to see news about some of these position decisions, and most of those having to do with the rookies. We're going to get some reads by Thursday.
All right, that's it. Well, interesting show, tight, efficient. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back on Thursday. For Kyle, for Tristan, I'm merely Eric Carabell. Have an awesome week.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.